Blog Talk Radio.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
Yes, it is. All right. Good crowd, bus people. And with us, as always, on the other line is Ron. Okay. We've got a little self-problems. Ron, we are having some audio issues right now, so that is going to... there's going to be some issues with the beginning part of the show until we get to straighten out. So I have actually nothing handy yet to play, so I will let you know while... let's see what we can do here. Let me type to him real quick. Maybe we can hear the intro again. no, we're not gonna do that. But anyway, my name is Mike. Thank you. And the bus people are here, and we are located in. Let's see where it's snowing outside, so that must mean we are in Florida. And let's see. Let me get into. Let's see if we can do something here, because I got to type to him, talk to you, and let you know about the Wine Fest coming up this Saturday. There's the official paper mute sound. So it's like I'm using an actual piece of paper, which I am. And let's see if I can. We got to get Ron's audio working here. He's on Windows Vista. And let's see what we can do here. And I'm on Linux, so that doesn't help very much, but I do have Vista on my other boot up here. Okay. This is what we. It'd be nice if we had a commercial going. Hold on just a second.
The following takes place between 7 and 8.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron of Florida Estates Winery. Wine enthusiasts can call us at any time during the broadcast by dialing 646-727-3235. Once again, the number is 646-727-3235. Wine industry representatives are also encouraged to join us on air.
This is Stuart Scott from Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Mike Brown, the Wine Growers Association of Georgia.
The executive director.
Michelle Meyer, I work with my father, Les Meyer, at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Westport Rivers Vineyard and Winery.
We're located at 417 Vicksburg Road, Westport, Mass., and our phone number is 508.
I'm on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association.
Always informative and entertaining.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
It's all about wine.
All right, thank you. Wow. I didn't realize you were there. Okay. There we go. One more time. Thank you for whistling. I appreciate that. That's always good to hear as well during the intro. Anyway, this coming Saturday on March 26th from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., come out to... okay. I hope it's still on. If he logs off, I may be logged off as well. I don't know. But come on out to Florida Estates Winery, located at 25241 State Road 52. That's 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. That is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75. If you go on Interstate 75, you're going to be taking exit 285 to State Road 52. and you're going to go west about 4 miles, and the winery will be on the right hand or on the north side, depending on which way you're coming. But it'll be on the north side down the little road there. And you want to be out there this Saturday. It's going to be beautiful. The weather's going to be perfect for this. It's going to be a great day. It's always a great day there at the winery, but this particular weekend is Wine Fest. So come on out, enjoy the music this weekend with Angelo Cook, who will be playing light and classical rock live out there underneath the oak trees. And you'll love his sounds. And you can also participate in an informative wine tasting with Ron. Have a little fun. Then shop the bountiful I got to look that one up. Vendors. They're going to have many unique handmade items and some brand names you have known throughout the years. Let's see. Who's going to be there? Let's see. We've got Valerie, who's going to bring high fashion jewelry without the high price. So you check it out. You can also visit the website at www.premierdesigns.com. Barbara is going to be there with Pampered Chef, so you definitely want to check that out. And let's see. Jennifer is going to be there on Saturday with Mary Kay. Tastefully Simple is going to be there from, you know, what they offer, main dishes to desserts. And there's a wide variety of easy-to-prepare foods and gifts for every day. So check that out. Let's see. Also, I'm trying to look at the other listings here. Don is going to be there with clocks, pictures, and puzzles, handcrafted clocks, and all kinds of designs and everything. You want to check that out. Diana is a Tupperware consultant, so she'll be there as well. And let's see, Kathy will bring Celebrating Home. It's all about you and your home. The product line includes beautiful home decor, fragrance items, and sensational new electric fragrance warmers. So check that out. And let's see, what else? Oh, CNC's Dog and Grill will be on hand and offer all beef hot dogs, smoked sausage, and a bunch of other cool things there at the Florida State's Wine. I'm just kind of winging it right now. Please don't wait. Go back and see if Ron makes it on it. Anyway, check it out. You're going to enjoy visiting the vendors and shopping there as well. It's great to pick up some gifts if you need some gift items. Now is a great time to come out to the winery. And you can also do a wine tasting there at the winery and sample some of the world-famous, world-class wines at and world-famous wines at the Wine Fest this Saturday, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. Let's see what else we have. If you'd like to call the winery direct, please do so at area code 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. That's the phone number for Florida Estates Winery, or email corp@flewn.com. That's corp@flewn.com. And every time I go there, I pick up they have like a, it's not a menu. What do you call this? It's a listing of their wines. And I usually go down, and especially when doing a wine tasting, that's the best time, because you get one of these and you go down and you start tasting the wines, and I go, okay, there's a check mark. I've got quite a few check marks on this. So any of you who are going to be at the winery this Saturday, I'll be at my other job that is actually paying. Pick me up a couple of bottles. I'm just kidding. No, seriously, if you're going to be there, pick me up a bottle. Let's see. Well, I got quite a few favorites, and actually everything from the top of the list to the bottom of the list, everything from, I'd say, Plantation White to the Casa del Sol Strawberry Port, those are my favorites, which basically includes everything. So let's see if he's back on. I see him on there, but I do not hear him. Okay. Trying to get an update from Ron. So, wish I had the cricket noise. Where's the cricket noise? Let me grab my other piece of paper here. Did you all check out our show last week? Last week's show was really cool, and I had a little bit of a soundbite during the intro that I grabbed from that show, because it was really cool to hear from Tammy, who is also the president and owner, part owner. Yeah, she's with her husband, right? Carlos Creek Winery. And it's the largest in the state when we discussed Minnesota. And she was also on the board of directors for the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. That was really cool listening to her talk about what she does and what the winery offers. That was last week. And, oh, I have something else going on. Let me see who this is. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
This is Ron. I called into the show just like a regular person.
All right. Well, let me get with our show host and see if he wants to take you on the air right now. Well, that's Oh, that's odd. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I called in to you here, and I was able to connect to you here, and this way, for some reason, I am not getting any sound, no matter what I do through my microphone and all that. So, my engineer, in her infinite wisdom, said that here, call in. So I'm just calling in, and I found this is a good way to do it. Oh.
Okay. Well, sorry about Skype. Skype is usually the best way, but, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and that's another thing, too. I tried to get back into Skype, and it was rejecting me and all sorts of stuff. So I figured I'd do this, and we can go from here.
Okay. Yeah. It shows that you're still on the host line, so I don't understand.
Is it? Yeah, I've got the screen up in front of me here, so I'm able to see what's going on in front of the screen here. But Skype is just not letting me talk. I can hear you very plainly. I've checked all my settings and everything else, and for some reason, I am not getting on a speaker. So,
okay. All right.
But I can do it this way. This works for me, we can. I guess if we call our guest, I told him we'd call him about this time. If we call our guest, I can hear him this way, or I can just turn up the volume on the program, and I can hear it there. So thing is, it's a slight delay, and it gives me an echo. So I don't think you can pick it up on that end, can you?
I'm picking up just a little bit of echo, but it's not too bad.
Okay.
If you still have me in the Skype chat thing, if you want to give me his information, I'll call him up for us. And
Skype is not letting me into it at all. It needs a password, and it's not accepting it.
Wow. Okay, then.
Oh, wait a minute here. It popped up here. I still got the chat. Okay. Let me give you his his phone number.
Okay.
And I'll have to find it here, and you give him a call. His name is Steve Kirby. He does dry farm wines. And I'm going to have to find it here real fast.
You know, because of our audio problems and all that, this is going to be probably the number one show of 2011.
No. That's usually the way it works. Everybody goes, hey, tune that in. That's really funny.
last year we did a show. I think we were delayed by 20 minutes. Or longer. I forgot how long it was, but it was like 20 minutes. We just could not get on, and we were having all kinds of problems. That show had like 500 and something listeners. I was like, what?
One of our biggest ones we ever had. It was amazing.
I was like, oh my God.
This one will probably be the same thing, too.
If this one does it, then next week we'll have the same problems.
So I am on air. People can hear me out there, I suppose, now. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
While you're down Steve up here, I can go ahead and talk to him for a while and stay on the air. So there you go. I just sent you the number. You can go ahead and get a hold of Steve, and I'll talk for a few minutes here to everyone. I apologize for being late on this. Actually, what happened was my computer, the one I've been using for years, which when you use a computer for years, it becomes a dinosaur. And my dinosaur died. It gave me a screen that I couldn't get out of it. No matter what I tried to do, no matter how I tried to do it, I couldn't get out of it. I called, it was a HP. I called HP support, and they said, that's expired and no warranties, and we can't help you do anything, but we can sell you a new one. So I didn't buy a new one over the line with them, and I brought my computer from the winery home, and that's actually where I broadcast from. It's home here all the time. And I brought my computer from home, and I tested it. Everything was hooked up, and everything was working until I tried to talk. And once I tried to talk, there was no sound. We're sitting there screaming and yelling and howling at each other trying to come up with sound, and we couldn't get sound. So now we are able to get on the line. We're able to talk. We're able to get everything taken care of without having to go through the switchboard. I don't know why that – or without having to go through the speaker. I don't know why that's working that way. I don't know what's going on. But we will get through this, and we will get it fixed by next week. And we do have a speaker tonight. It looks like he's on the line. He's there ready to join us, I think. And so we'll get a note or get Mike in here in just a minute to let us know that everything's okay. His name is Steve Kirby, and he does dry farm wines. Well, he'll tell us all about it and everything. He's been doing this for a number of years, and he's got quite a bit of background behind him and all that. So we will let him talk to you about it. We will let him tell you all about it and everything when he gets on with us here. It looks like we lost him. He was here, and now he's gone.
I have to call him back. He has to switch to a landline phone, so I'll call him right back.
Oh, okay.
A couple minutes.
Once we finish talking with Steve here, though, don't run away, don't leave us, because I'm going to rant for a while about HR1161.
Oh,
wow. We were all talking about last year about HR 5034, the CARE Act is what they call it. And this was the wholesaler monopoly legislation, basically, is what it boiled down to. And they are, when the legislature in Washington, D.C. submits a bill and it goes to committee, and most everything does go to committee, and after committee, then it's acted upon by a vote or whatever. If for any reason that doesn't get voted on, the bill dies. That's the end of it. It doesn't go any further. And then they have to resubmit the bill the next legislative session. This is what happened to the old 5034, is that it was dead. I tried to follow up on it. I think I mentioned something last week or so about this. I tried to follow up on it, couldn't find anything. I was told that I would be contacted as soon as the new bill was submitted, and last week, Thursday, sent me information on a new bill being submitted. And so I'm going to be talking about this new bill and what it involves and a few things about that, and how you can stay on top of it yourselves and know what's going on, and write your congressman, write your representatives, write anybody you can think of, because this is a bill that could impact every one of us, all of us who drink wine, whiskey, beer, anything. It could affect every one of us. If you're listening to the program, it's going to affect you. It's as simple as that. But we'll get into that in a little bit more detail, and we'll get into that a little bit more during the after the program here, toward the end of the program. Steve said that he can talk, but not for a full hour, which actually we don't need him for a full hour now anyway. After our video problems or our audio problems, we don't need him to talk for an hour anyway. But we will discuss the new HR 1161 after we've talked to Steve about his farming and what all he's done. So I thought he was on the line. It looks like he's gone again. I'm sitting here looking at the connection that Mike is trying to get, and we're having problems. So while he's doing that, I heard Mike has covered the festival this Saturday. We are looking forward to beautiful weather down here in Florida. If you're listening to this anywhere in the country, we are having just absolutely gorgeous weather. The highs are in the upper 70s, and the lows at night are dropping into the low 60s and upper 50s. So it's been absolutely gorgeous weather here. It'd be a great day for the festival. All of you who are out there who are basketball fans and keeping up with the tournament, good luck to you. I've got my brackets all set. I'm running 91% on two of them and down to like 35% on a couple of others. So I am doing okay on some of them, but most of them not so well. Let's see. Is Steve with us yet? We keep on. Oh, I hear the phone ringing. Steve is going to be joining us.
Yes, there he is. He's on now.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, is this Ron?
Yes, it is. I'm glad
you
could join us. We apologize for the delays on this. I had audio problems, and I'm talking on my phone the same as you are. So we'll get this done. But I introduced you a little bit to the people. Again, this is Steve Kirby from Rainborn Wines in Santa Rosa, California. And Steve, you do some a little bit different farming on your grapes than most people do now. I'll let you tell us about that and go with that.
Well, the philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn. And it's not a new idea. You know, 40 years ago, if you had said you dry farmed your vineyard here in Sonoma County or Napa Valley for that matter, no one would have batted an eyelash because all the vineyards were dry farmed. Drip irrigation wasn't standard use at that time. So I'm not doing anything new. I'm just doing something that I feel allows the vineyard to express itself more completely from both the standpoint of the place and also the time. So I think of terroir as not only just place, but also time and vintage and what happens in the year that grows those grapes, and also what happens in the years up to, you know, the previous years. So sort of the totality of the expression of the weather and the place. So I feel like making wines from dry farm vineyards gives the purest expression of that. And don't get me wrong, I think that you can make some excellent tasting wines from irrigated vineyards. I think there's plenty of fantastic wines out there being made from vineyards that are drip irrigated. And from a strictly a hedonistic standpoint, drip irrigation might actually make it a little easier to produce a wine that's rich and high in alcohol, lower acids, so softer because you get lots of hang time, let it hang on the vine for a long time. So you can make a very attractive wine that way. But for me, the more expressive wines aren't necessarily the most hedonistic wines, the wines that show really a lot of vintage character and a lot of sort of stream of consciousness character year after year when you drink wines from the same place. So that is the goal in dry farming. And I guess I can talk a little bit about why dry farming has gone out of fashion. And it's gone out of fashion because 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago, everyone planted on the same rootstock pretty much. It was called St. George, Rupestis St. George. There's still vines planted on today. Some of my vineyards, or one of my vineyards in particular, is on St. George rootstock. And as when drip irrigation came in, well, first we had problems with phylloxera. Rootstocks came into existence, and then everyone planted on St. George. Well, when we started planting on other rootstocks that weren't as drought resistant, we needed to use drip irrigation. And having drip irrigation allowed us to use all sorts of different kinds of rootstocks. So, and you could choose a rootstock that was good for the site, so that was resistant to the type of pests that were there, or that was better for the type of soils you had, if it had needed lime resistance or some sort of resistance to a problematic soil. You could do that without being too worried about its drought resistance because you had this ability to irrigate. So over time, these drought-resistant rootstocks sort of went out of fashion, and that's why drip irrigation is really quite necessary in quite a few vineyards today. But that's a really short history of why we drip irrigate now. But it's not required, and if you set up a vineyard properly, dry farming is really quite green and very ecologically conscious, and I think makes some of the most interesting wines. So,
Steve and I talked earlier, and I was telling him that when I lived in California, we went through a period there where it was major, major drought. This was in the mid-late 70s, and we were told to put a brick in all of our toilets and to cut down on the flushing and take short showers, and the shower with the friend theme came out very popular back then and all that. And that was back when the vineyards were all being a little bit less water and a little bit more counting on the climate to water them. And I never realized the rootstock played that much of a difference in it. That's an interesting point there. Does your vineyards, the vintage is what I'm asking, vary a lot because of not watering, or are you pretty consistent?
Well, you know, in California, like you said, you were you know, calling us back to a time when we had a period of drought, and we will have a period of drought again. It's California is generally an arid state. However, I will say this year we're at in Santa Rosa, where I'm located, we're over 35 inches of rain, so we're 125% of the year's normal already, and this season lasts all the way through the end of June. So we don't have any shortage of water this year or last year. Yes, I think what happens typically is in a period of drought where you have a dry farm vineyard that's on a rootstock that can handle the drought, what happens is you get actually really super intensely flavored wines, and the longer the drought lasts, the more intense the wines become. 1978 and 79 are just stupendous California vintages, and you know what? That's right around the time you're talking about when there was a drought.
Right.
So what happens is it definitely shows through, and it's somewhat cumulative. I mean, I don't know if we have drought for enough years to really kill off the grapevine if it's on the right rootstock. And my professors at UC Davis always told me that, you know what, they won't die, and I tend to believe them, especially if it's on a drought resistant rootstock. But, you know, year after year, it has a cumulative effect. And so drier seasons could actually even lead to better wines. The problem probably becomes at that point is, you know, yields are going to come down a little bit. And farmers don't like that. And wineries that own vineyards actually don't like that either. They need to be able to make a certain amount of wine to stay in business. So I guess in the end, a lot of the time it comes down to an economic question. And so you can't blame people for wanting to stay afloat.
What grapes do you have planted in your vineyards? And how much? How many acres of each?
I do not own vineyards personally. That is my ultimate goal, is to establish and own my own vineyards. Right now I contract vineyards.
Ah.
So I contract vineyards from one vineyard from a very well-known family in the Carneros region called the San Giacomo family. They farm it. And this is a vineyard that was planted in 1974 and on St. George rootstock, and it has always been dry farmed. So it's a pretty ideal vineyard for my brand, for Rainborn. But I don't even buy all the fruit from that vineyard. It's bigger than my brand, you know, has an outlet for. So I have a lot of room to grow in that vineyard. I also have another vineyard in Bennett Valley that I make wine from, that is a beautiful hillside dry farm vineyard. And again, I don't own it. I contract with the grower, and he was nice enough to say, yeah, disconnect my irrigation and we'll dry farm it just the way you want it. And the wines have come out fantastic. So I think it takes a little bit of leap of faith. Unless the growers have been around, you know, for a lot of years and remember how it was done, it takes a little bit of a leap of faith for them to say, yeah, okay, no water. But once they make the leap, there's no problem.
You do basically Pinot Noir then, from what I understand.
I do, but I won't. I started this Rainborn in 2007, and I made a 2007 Pinot Noir from the Bennett Valley Vineyard, and then I had a Russian River Valley Vineyard that I had dry farmed in 2008, but oddly enough, even though we were in the Russian River, and you wouldn't think this to be the case, I had some smoke taint. California had a lot of wildfires in 2008, and my wine was a little smoke tainted. And I just, you know, being a new brand, I didn't want to put that out there because I didn't really have much of a reputation. So I sold off the 2008 wine into the bulk market, and then in 2009 I happened to get Pinot Noir again, but I would not limit dry farming wines and making dry farm wines to Pinot Noir. It just happens that I'm in Santa Rosa, which is basically the Russian River Valley, and this is Pinot Noir country. So I'd happily make some Petit Syrah or Zinfandel or 100-year-old vine field blend of of multiple varietals, including those two, which is sort of what you find around here in 100-year-old vineyards that have actually never seen a drop of irrigation.
As long as people continue not to irrigate, you would be happy with anything then, basically.
Exactly. That's and because my point is again, I'm looking for expression, and so I don't think there's any one varietal that is overly more expressive than others. Something like Syrah or Petit Syrah or Zinfandel or heck, Cabernet Sauvignon for that matter. If they're farmed diligently and if the fruit that comes from the vineyard is intense, then they can make expressive wines.
What influence do you think the soil in each of those vineyards have on the unwatered or rain-borne wines, as opposed to other soils that might hold the water more? What's the influence of the soil in the two vineyards?
Well, you know, soil, I guess people once thought that terroir was soil, and it is a really important. It is not the only aspect of terroir, but it is a really important aspect of terroir. And you know, how the vine explores the soil has a great effect on how expressive of the place the wines made from those vines are. For example, when you drip irrigate, if you look at the root mass of a vine, it huddles around the drip emitter. So you have a field full of vines, and really they're only exploring a very small part of the field right where they're getting sort of their fix of water. So in California, we have a lot of different soil types. What's really common in California is for the subsoils to be actually quite low in pH. Without going into too much detail, we'll say that the subsoils are more acidic, which isn't exactly the same thing, but for all intents and purposes, we'll call it that. And so if you don't do some augmentation of the soils in advance, it does make it more difficult for the vine to be happy exploring a little deeper. And a lot of hillside vineyards that make some fantastic wines don't have a lot of soil to explore. So, you know, if you want to grow grapes on a hillside vineyard and have a lot of hang time, which has been very popular in California in the last, 10 years or so, you would need to give those wines some water, I think, those vines some water to keep the fruit from raisining up any more than it already is going to. I think it's pretty common to let the fruit hang long enough to where it does get some raisiny flavors, and that I try to avoid.
Pinot Noir is notoriously tough to grow anyway. Is the lack of water, other than just the natural water, an issue?
I don't think so. I think for Pinot Noir, and one of the reasons that Pinot Noir is considered so tough to grow is mainly that the skins on it aren't tough. So it's more susceptible to rot. And in general, Pinot Noir, as a rule, yields less than almost any other varietal. And, you know, most farmers don't really like that. I understand the issue. Why grow fruit that you can, if you try real hard, you can get 3 or 4 tons off the acre where you could grow something else and get twice that much without as much effort. So I think that's probably the reason Pinot Noir, those two reasons are why it has such a reputation for being hard to grow is that it doesn't yield a lot of fruit, and that it tends to be soft-skinned and a little less durable than other varietals if you get rain or problematic conditions. So so what was the question again?
Pinot Noir, being with the reputation of being hard to grow, yeah, the thin skins and all that, does just relying on the little bit of rain that you get and not irrigating cause a problem with your yield, your harvest, it doesn't give you a big yield per acre anyway, and then when you're not watering
anyway. If you were using drip irrigation really sparingly versus no irrigation at all, the yields would be, I would say, similar, especially with Pinot Noir, because there's not a big range of yields anyway. where irrigated can get you bigger yields, and trust me, it's done a lot, is to use a lot of water. So and in that case, we're talking sort of about a different level of wine.
Yeah, I know. A lot of water will puff up your grape real. They give you a lot of juice in it. After you get it, you're not watering it, and you get your grapes, you take it in. I noticed on your website that a line says, and I quoted on it, no yeast or bacteria are added to the grapes, and the wine is bottled unfine and unfiltered. Explain the reasoning behind all that.
Well, again, it's an attempt at a consistent expression. So when I bring grapes into the winery, and it's pretty typical to use commercial yeasts on a lot of crushed grapes, which we call must. But for Pinot Noir in general, people always say how hard Pinot Noir is to make, but from a standpoint of the fermentation process, it's actually a really easy grape to ferment. So what happens when it gets into the winery is, rather than mix up a commercial yeast culture and have the thing take off as soon as I add it, I basically just keep it cool and keep it punched down. All my fermentations are done in open top containers, so no pumping over, just punching down. Over 5 to 7 days, a yeast population will build up in there and then take off and complete the fermentation. And that yeast population, the studies have shown that generally the yeast that finishes the job is some yeast that's in the winery. And of course there are commercial yeast fermentations going on in the winery. So I have no doubt that ultimately the wine is being finished with a commercial yeast strain, but the mixed population early on and the mixed population throughout the first maybe half of the fermentation can give you more interesting aromas and characteristics than a single pure strain doing the job. And I never seem to have any problems with completing the fermentation. Same thing with the malolactic bacteria. I don't add any malolactic bacteria. Over time, the wine builds up its own population of malolactic bacteria and finishes the job. And in both cases, especially with the bacteria, it actually ends up taking significantly longer to finish the malolactic fermentation. And some winemakers might not like that risk, especially if you're making large quantities of wine. I don't think I'd like that risk either if I were dealing with 20,000 cases or something. But what happens is if the malolactic fermentation takes a little longer, then and I wait longer before I have to add any sulfur dioxide to the wine. So in the end, I end up adding sulfur dioxide fewer times. So by the time I get it to the bottle, I've had to add less sulfur dioxide than if I had added a commercial strain of malolactic bacteria and finished my malolactic fermentation sooner. So it just makes the whole process more natural. Like I said, there might be a little more risk involved, but I think it's worth it from a standpoint of the inputs. And I personally have never had problems with my wines. And the number one reason for that is diligence in the vineyard. So getting the grapes in from the vineyard clean, without a lot of problems, without a lot of material other than grapes, without being high in temperature. If you can do these things, start the process right, there's really no reason to be very interventionist with the wine.
I have talked on previous programs about organic farming. How do you feel you differ from organic farming or even the bio...
Biodynamic farming.
Biodynamic, thank you. I forgot that word today, and I forgot it again now.
We
were talking
forget.
Today, and I couldn't think of that word. The difference between what you do on biodynamic and organic farming, can you give a comparison?
I can. I will start with, some of the rules governing organic farming are pretty open. I mean, you can go look them up. This is what qualifies as organic farming. The rules regarding biodynamic farming are a little more opaque. It's not quite as easy to understand what is considered biodynamic and what you have to do to be biodynamic. I mean, you really have to go through a certification process. It's just not quite as clear to me what makes something biodynamic versus what makes something organic.
I think it's chickens in the vineyard.
What's that?
Chickens. I think chickens in the vineyard.
Well, what about the dancing? I like the dancing aspect of
well,
it.
That's and the goat horns. I mean, you know.
So I mean, I like the concept. I mean, I love organic. I love the idea of keeping the synthetic fertilizer and the synthetic pesticides and synthetic antifungals out of the vineyard. I'm all for that. And there's no reason why you can't do that. Most vineyards can be farmed organically without that much trouble. And then for the biodynamic, I like the idea of doing things that keep you in touch with sort of the rhythms of nature and so forth. Although I'm not in full understanding of what you need to do to be biodynamic, I like the concept. But you know, neither one of those concepts has the layer that okay, we're not going to add. We're not going to add the extra control that is water. So I find them. I would love to have a dry farmed organic vineyard. That would be fantastic. But when I go to a grower and I say I want to buy your grapes and I want you to farm for me, it's the bigger question is, you know, are you willing to not irrigate? Because its certification process takes years, generally speaking, for organic or biodynamic, and obviously none of them can do that in a single vintage.
Right.
But they can basically take out their irrigation and say, I'm going to do this without water. And for me, it's actually a bigger deal than organic or biodynamic because it's a bigger change. It also takes some of the non-organic practices out of the process. So a lot of farmers who don't farm organically, what they'll do is they'll use synthetic fertilizer, and it's called fertigation, and they'll go ahead and put it in their drip irrigation system and basically just feed the vine through these drip emitters.
Right.
And if you can't drip irrigate, you can't fertigate. So it's not so much extra work to spread some manure in the vineyard then, because there's no easy delivery system for a non-organic fertilizer.
That's
so
true.
I honestly, if you're in a place where you can dry farm, and not every place is appropriate for dry farming, but most really super high quality wine growing regions in California are appropriate for dry farming. And originally they were dry farmed, but I feel like that ought to be where people start. I would love organic. I would love a biodynamic. I find those concepts important and interesting, but I mean. Dry farming is just more basic and probably has a bigger effect right away, both in the vineyard and on the world around us.
Do you think this is something that's going to catch on again, or do you think it's just a niche thing that you might be filling in and maybe a few others?
Well, it is myself, and there are a few others. I mean, probably one of the bigger others is Frog's Leap Winery in the Napa Valley. They're doing dry farming. And, they're a bigger, more powerful producer, and they're an important advocate for it. But I think that, being here in California, water is becoming a really big issue. Each year it becomes a bigger issue. Frost protection right now is a big issue in the news out here in the Sonoma County, the Russian River Valley. So I think that this is going to become a bigger thing. I mean, I like to think that myself and the other people that are trying to do this are pioneers, and that it'll go more in this direction over time. And it really is more of a change in the way people think more than anything else, because it's not beyond our abilities to do this with relative ease.
You mentioned frost protection out there. I'm going to ask you to give me a little bit more information on that. I haven't heard too much about that.
So this time of year, starting about now, I mean, but this has been a very cold winter, and so bud breaks a little bit later than usual here in the Russian River Valley, but maybe a week later, about a week, maybe more in some cooler places. But early in the season, when the vines start pushing their young green shoots, which are very tender and very easily damaged, if we get a frost, it can kill off those young shoots. And that really will set back the harvest, and it will really cut back on yields. So, so because the vine will basically have to start all over again. So, you know, so different wineries use different concepts for frost protection. They use overhead micro-emitters so that they spray a little bit of water on the young shoots, and so the water freezes rather than the young shoots. Some wineries use wind machines because most of the frost here is frost that can be basically pushed away. The cold air can be moved, and therefore you don't get damage to the grapevines with these big, powerful wind machines they turn on. So in California, every year is different. This year, I couldn't tell you whether we're going to have a bad frost year or not, but the two previous years, there was a lot of frost, and some vineyards, did have some serious frost damage.
Uh-huh. It's the same as here in Florida with our strawberries.
And don't you have that problem with the oranges, too?
Oranges and strawberries. Well, whenever they show any frost in Florida to the country, they always show oranges being frozen with water on them being frozen. That seems to be the quintessential picture of Florida when we have frost. But they do the same thing with the strawberries. They put a coating of ice on it to protect it, because a coating of ice keeps the temperature right at 32 degrees. It doesn't
exactly.
The damage occurs when the temperature drops down to like 26 degrees for over 4 hours. So 32 safe, 26 bad. So
sounds
like the same principle you run across up there.
Same principle. I mean, and then in an ideal world, your vineyard has is on a hillside or something like that, so the cold air drains off, and there's no real need for any sort of frost protection. But I'll tell you what, this time of year, there are a lot of farmers up at 3, 4 in the morning every day, and they're tired and unhappy.
I can imagine there are, yes. And there's been some nasty weather going around, too, so it's hard to call it. I talked to different wineries around the country, and I talked to some in Minnesota last week, and the one particular winery I talked to, Carlos Creek Winery, said that they had 2 feet of snow on the ground still, so...
Really, where's this? In Minnesota?
Minnesota, yeah.
Right. Well, there's still there's still quite a bit of snow up at Lake Tahoe here in California, and this was a very cold winter. We had snow on the mountains, which we call the geysers, and Mount St. Helena and so forth here in wine country. Snow came down as low as like 1,000 feet above sea level here this year, which is pretty low.
It's really low, yes. I remember living out there, and you get the snow that low, and then everything was cold. Yeah.
Yeah. It gets dangerous. No one knows how to drive in it.
That's right. Steve, one other thing I want to bring up before I let you go here. I noticed on your website, and I do have to bring this up, that you made a career as a classical ballet dancer.
That was what I did before I got into the wine business. That's why, you know, the biodynamic dancing in the vineyard part, you know, that sounds good to me. Yes, for about 10 years I pursued that, and it was fantastic. It was great fun, but I felt like because of age and because of injuries, I had to move on, and I felt like I had so much more to learn as an artist, And that's kind of what brought me into the wine business, because I thought, wow, you know, this is something that you can continue to learn about and can continue to get better at probably for the rest of your life. So that really appealed to me after having a career where you're old when you're 29.
I can imagine, you know, as a classical ballet dancer, I would have trouble probably the first week and have to retire.
Then you'd be lucky and smart and move on.
Yeah, I can understand that. So, well, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to let you tell us your website, your phone number, your location, all that good stuff. So if anybody out there would like to get a hold of you, they can do so. So give us all the information on yourself and everything else, and anything else you'd like to say at the end here.
I'll do that. You can find all the information and a place to purchase Rainborn Wines on the web at www.rainbornwines.com, and that's R-A-I-N-B-O-R-N-E, wines, plural, with an S on the end, .com. And we're located in Santa Rosa. You can reach me directly, Steve Kirby, at my cell phone, which is 415-722-3018. And I would love to hear from somebody either via email or phone call that that listened in on this show and had any sort of comment.
Very good. And the Santa Rosa is in Sonoma Valley. We want to tell people we talked about California a few months ago. And Santa Rosa is in Sonoma Valley, which is north of San Francisco. So if anybody's out there in San Francisco visiting or in that area, then by all means stop up and visit Steve and tell him that you heard about the wines and his growing on All About Wine and you'd like to watch him dance. So,
well, you know, if someone comes up, I promise to do a little dance for them.
All right, there you go. That's going to motivate me to go out to California now. Well, thank you very much. Mike, you have any questions or anything before we say goodbye to Steve here?
No, I was just looking at probably the same page you were about some of his background and everything. It's very impressive. I was just reading off the website. It says you earned a degree with honors in viticulture and enology from UC Davis, and you know, been getting into the business and everything. It's really interesting, and the dry farming process and everything is interesting. So yeah, very good information.
Nice website.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope some other people. Some of the people that listen to this blog will look into it further. And really, I want to sell wine, of course, but I just want people to be aware of the philosophy and aware of the idea and aware of this practice as a sort of earth-friendly way to grow grapes.
You did a very good job of presenting it. Thank you very much for your time, and best of luck to you.
All right. Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
You're welcome.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. There we go.
That was interesting. Not quite organic, but the mindset, the thought of organic, I think, is what he's really owning. He's looking more toward the whole aspect of it in the vineyard and bringing it on through. So, really, I hope he does well with it. He does. He has a couple of Pinot Noirs on his website. It lists a couple of Pinot Noirs and. The one in 2008, like he said, a lot of smoke and bad weather going through California, so he didn't do a vintage there, but he's got the 7 and 9 that are still available.
Yeah, it's interesting reading about that on the website. So, very good. So, I don't know, maybe we'll pick up with him later on in some other time.
Yeah, when we do our bus tour, we can catch him out there.
Yes. that's around the corner.
I told everyone that we're going to talk a little bit about HR 1161 is the what they call the CARES Act, the Community Alcohol Regulatory Effectiveness Act of 2011, or the CARE Act. There is a a Facebook page for the CARES Act that is available. Let me find it here. I had it up here just a little bit ago. Here it is. It's a Facebook page. I believe it says Facebook.com and Stop HR 1161. So if anyone's out there on Facebook and wants to pull that up, it's Stop HR 1161. And a formula little thing, it'll keep you on top of it and it'll let you know what's going on with this and as it goes through the steps and everything else. Reading from the Facebook page, this is a good synopsis of what we're talking about on this. It's wine consumers are the ultimate target of HR 1161, I'll refer to it. HR 1161 gives states the power to pass otherwise unconstitutional laws that reduce consumer access to wine over the internet, and to smaller production beer and spirits, which we're talking about our boutique wineries, we're talking about our microbreweries, and we're talking about the little small places that do the spirits and stuff. HR 1161 gives states the power to follow the advice of alcohol wholesalers and forbid wine lovers from purchasing imported wines, wine of the month clubs, rare wines, and auction wines that they can't find locally. Basically what this means, and I'm, again, not reading, but what this means is any of these things that you get, wine clubs and all that, has to go through a distributor as opposed to getting it directly from the wineries. This is what this bill is looking at. To continue reading, it does this by allowing discriminatory bans on shipment of wine from out-of-state retailers. Who are the ones that sell imported wines, offer wine of the month clubs, auction wines, and most often sell hard-to-find and rare wines? If you want a sense of what kind of wine laws wholesalers favor, consider that they have, and these are the wine laws that have been passed, they oppose shipment of wine from in-state wineries, and we've talked to wines that can't ship within the state. They oppose shipment of wines from out-of-state wineries. We have talked to wineries that have also can't ship but to a few states. They oppose shipment of wine from out-of-state wine retailers. We've run across that. They oppose shipment from wine from out-of-state wine of the month clubs. They oppose wine being sold in grocery stores, and we have talked to wineries about that, and some of the local states are making those laws where they can. They oppose retailers being able to buy directly from out-of-state wineries. This is your local wine shop can't pick up a case of Florida State wine and carry it on their shelves just so they can have a big, diverse selection of wines from around the country. This is what this law can stop doing. All of these things give consumers better access to a larger variety of wines, but wholesalers have opposed them all. Wholesalers who are behind H.R. 1161 oppose these policies that promote consumer access to wine, not for any altruistic reasons having to do with minors accessing wine or the state being able to collect taxes. They oppose them because in each instance the sale doesn't go through the wholesaler. There are some very large wholesalers in this country that are behind this. There's no reason to believe that once H.R. 1161 passes, wholesalers won't continue their legislative crusade to take wine choices out of consumer hands. This is quoted from the Facebook page, facebook.com/stophr1161. So if anyone's interested in getting on that, by all means, get on that. There are a lot of information out there about H.R. 1161. Beverage World is a big advocate behind this. Beverage World is probably one of the strongest magazine behind it. Beverage World's a magazine that we actually get at the winery. It's one of the trade journals that we do receive at the winery. There's quite a few articles in that one continuously about this new law, and they are very, very strongly set against it. There's also a lot of other organizations and a lot of other companies that are against this. The interests that oppose this bill include liquor wholesalers, wine and distilled spirit manufacturers, and beer companies. Specific organizations who are opposing this law include the National Association of Beverage Importers, the Brewers Association, Wine America, Distilled Spirits Council of the United States, Wine Institute, and the Beer Institute. So this is something that you can do. You can write your congressman, you can write your senator, you can write your representative, you can write anybody that you feel might listen to you a little bit and let them know how opposed you are to this. The last bill, the one that went so far, the 5034, went quite a ways through before it died because of the session. This one's being introduced way at the beginning, and it's something we really need to stop. If you need to know who your senators and representatives are, then you can go on to the computer, any search engine, and look up government, and they list everybody for every state and all that stuff with phone numbers, email addresses, and regular addresses. We're getting at the end here for our regular programming time. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Sorry about the beginning and the problems there. Mike, anything at the end here?
No, I was just saying I did a search. I used the Facebook search because I'm on there now. I figured I'll go look it up, and I could not locate the one that you were referring to until you gave the Earl the website address on the Facebook. So if you don't search for it, because you're going to find two communities on there that have zero people interested in it or liking it, do the facebook.com/stophr1161, and that'll take you to the one that has right now 975. Plus me. I don't know if I got counted in there or not. But anyway, but definitely join that and read the information on there and definitely put a stop to HR 1161 and, you know, support that too. So, we're off of the live version. So
we're off the live version. We're on our overtime here. So, but I want to get that in about that HR 1161. That thing is just another nasty attempt by people who don't know what they're doing in government and listening to pressure from distributors. And distributors are big, big lobbyists. These people put lots of money into it, and this is one of the things that we need to be concerned about. So contact your congressman. If you need any help or need anything, contact me. I will be more than happy to do it. And one other thing, I set up an email address for All About Wine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's allaboutwine101@gmail.com.
Anytime I need to find out information on the show, I'll just email that. allaboutwine101.
Yeah, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. So if anybody out there wants to get a hold of me, that's just for All About Wine.
That's cool.
Contact us just for that. You don't have to go through the winery and contact me there. You can contact me just for the program.
Yep. There was something else that I came up with. I was doing, I think I did a Google search for iTunes, and I put All About Wine in quotes. And sure enough, it took me to the iTunes website, and it had every single show that has ever been done.
Oh, really?
On Blog Talk Radio. I was like, oh my gosh! It was all in a list. And you can play it from there, or you can download it to your iPod or your iTunes compatible player, whatever you have. And it was real simple. I didn't know it was going to find it that easy, but sure enough, it came up. And
All About Wine.
And yes.
What'd you do?
I did. Let me see if I could do it again. But I went to I just did a Google search, and I typed iTunes, and then I put All About Wine in quotes, and I believe it's the top link that's on Google right now, and it will actually, if you go to that on the iTunes website, after you click on that link, if it comes up, it has your picture on it, the same one that we use on Blog Talk Radio.
That's a horrible picture.
it's that little avatar icon thing, whatever that we have for the show, that's on there, and it has your picture on it. So I'm like, all right. But every single show that goes back to 2009, I think some of 2009, I did some of my own shows before it went into the wine. The wine show started on May 21st, 2009.
Did it really? Wow.
I know.
We're right at our 2-year anniversary now.
I didn't even realize. I guess so.
Yeah.
We're coming up to that. Wow.
Oh, May. We're just a couple months shy of our 2-year anniversary.
And less than 2 years, we already have a company jet, and we're waiting on the RV now.
Waiting for that big RV bus so we can hit the road. Yeah,
yeah.
We're doing pretty good.
If you,
all we need to do is get gas prices down so we can afford to use everything.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper than the jet. That's for sure.
That's true.
So it's real simple to find the shows on iTunes, and you can download them and listen to them at your leisure whenever. Kind of like what you can do on Blog Talk Radio, but every single show is on iTunes. And oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it.
I was looking it up on Blog Talk Radio, and it's a little bit difficult to find all of them on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah.
Well,
I had troubles finding two. I mean, they didn't list all of them. At one time, I was able to see all of them listed page after page, but I was looking for just. When was it? Yesterday morning, and I was going through trying to see what I can find. And I was really having a hard time seeing them all. There's this one lady on there, Wine and Dine or something. I see a whole bunch of her pictures, but there was not a lot of everything else. So,
Interesting. I know if you do a generic search or just, you know, put All About Wine or just wine in there, you'll come up with some of the other shows that are on Blog Talk Radio. I know there's Stu the Wine Guru is on there, and then there's a couple of other wine shows. We're definitely out there. So
good.
I was shocked on that.
I'll have to check that out. That's always fun.
Real simple.
So I sent you a copy of the letter I sent to Sonia in Australia. Did you see that?
Yes. Yes, I did. And
she
I think
hasn't gotten in
just
touch with me, but when she does, we might be able to get her on for a program.
Okay.
She says she's looking forward to it. She'd really like to do it. So we need to hook up Skype so we can bring her into it.
Yeah, that'd probably be one of those that we just, because I can network her or, you know, do a conference call like we did in the old days and bring her on, just do Skype to Skype and then call into the show like I normally do. And then she could just use that. So that would work easily.
That'd work well. Yeah, she's been on Skype before, so she's familiar with it.
Okay.
She just said she needs to hook up her account again. So
good. Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds good. So as soon as she gets in touch with me, and next week we may be doing the guy who wrote the book, Millennial Wine Drinkers, the young ones. I sent him a letter or an email, and I haven't heard from him yet. I'll follow up again probably today or tomorrow, tonight or tomorrow, and see if I can't get a hold of him. But that is what I'm looking at for next week.
Are you going to have the same computer next time? Or
probably. Mine took a dive,
right?
So I'm going to be playing with this thing and see what I can't come up to get some sound on this.
Okay. Well, I was thinking if you had disconnected, because you're still on, it shows you're still on the switchboard. If you had disconnected that account, it would have shut off the program. We would not have been able to go on air without that account being connected to it. So you still there?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, yeah, it shows that you're still on there on Skype connected, but if you had hung up, because I kept saying, hang up Skype, and then I thought, oh, no, if he hangs up on Skype, then we're all going to be muted.
I kept Skype up since I'm the host, so I had to
keep it up. Very good. Okay, well, let's see. I already told everybody about the Wine Fest and contact information. Again, call the winery, Florida State's Winery Direct, 813-996-2113. And oh, we're not live. Oh, well, okay. Or go to our email, corp@flewn.com, corp@flewn.com.
Or visit All About Wine 101.
That's right.
Google or at gmail.com.
I have to start pushing that, don't I?
Yeah, you can start doing that, too.
That's right. That'd be even better. And visit the website at www.floridaestateswines.com. There's your website. So I'm going to and you have a wine fest. I already did that while we were off earlier. I did the wine fest.
Yeah, I heard you. I was sitting there listening to you going, what am I going to do?
It's a panic.
That's right. I did. I hit the panic button.
But luckily you have the more expensive option of calling in.
Yes. Right. We got pretty long distance, so it works well.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a good backup.
A good backup. Yeah, that's who I talk to all of my – whenever I call wineries around the country, this is my my way to do it. So,
excellent. That sounds good. So, okay. Well, everyone, I guess we'll see you all next Thursday, and we'll put the bulletin up as soon as I find out what the show content is, or we'll just say, you know, it's going to be another show all about wine. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Ron, and thank you, Steve, out there again for your...
Yes, thank you, Steve, for your time with us, if you happen to be listening to this. And, again, Mike, thank you. Excellent job covering for me while I was having audio problems there at the beginning.
I have to get more training, I guess.
thank
you.
Did good. You didn't go,
I was trying to read the screen, see if you were typing anything, and go back to the switchboard screen to see if there was anything on there.
That's what I try to do that at times, too, and I go, forget this. Do just like you do. Wait a minute, I got to read this.
they can only read our minds and react to that. You know, computers.
That's true. That's very true.
It's so much easier. All right, I'll see you all next Thursday,
next
7 Eastern time. Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
No, thank you.
Thank you.